162 games of baseball a season can feel like a grind to watch, but you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Run lines, money lines, props galore. Nobody gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. Getting started is simple. Deposit $300 and play with $200 instantly. Just use promo code ZABE to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus. Whether you're a diehard fan or a newcomer to the sport, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using promo code ZABE to secure your first deposit bonus up to $1,000 with MyBookie. Whatever you put in, they'll meet halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.com.
Today's Power Lunch is brought to you by The Palm in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. Sure, The Palm is great for a fancy night out, but it's also the perfect midweek spot for a lunch with a client, or a lunch to catch up with a friend, or maybe even to do an interesting podcast like this. Power Lunch menu selections at The Palm start at $26 for an appetizer, meal, and dessert. Book your reservation today directly at thepalm.com, open table, or by calling them at 703-917-0200.
I can make most anything on the menu except
whatever you got is fine.
I'm going to say some bad words. You're just going to have to deal with it.
PB&J with the crusts cut off. Well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch.
Hey, you got enough money to pay for all this? You know, money, cash, dollars, dinero.
So what I believe you were trying to say is thank you.
Thank you?
You're welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome?
Yes, Buck.
Yeah, bring my audio up a little bit or my hearing, whatever. 1, 2, 3, 4, good.
How's
thank
that,
you.
Old
yep.
man?
Yep.
You've got announcer old man hearing?
I do, man.
I love it.
I do.
So I'm here today, and the boys are talking dental implants when I get to the Palm today. And I'm like, Jesus, are we that old? Can we not skew a little bit younger, for God's sakes? Buck Hance, you're what, 64 years old now?
I'll be 67 next month.
Oh, 67 next
this
month.
This month, actually.
Naki, how old are you? Chronologically.
64. I'm headed towards Medicare at the end of the year.
Zay. 64, but you
I can
have
tell
the...
you all about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You kidding me?
But, Naki, you've got the mindset of a, what, 20-year-old? 18-year-old.
I'm totally...
Emotional age. Give me that maturity age.
The mind yeah. says one thing, but the body doesn't cooperate.
Yeah, I'm 17.
Oh,
you know.
God. Yeah. I love that you guys are here. I'm sorry that... Carol couldn't make it. She had something come up. She's a business owner now that's up to her neck in this yoga studio, which I hope is doing well.
Yeah,
have
I don't
been
know.
There?
I haven't been there. I've seen pictures online that she sends me.
Do you want to go there, the three of us, and do yoga?
I want to see Buck
Carol.
Doing downward dog something, whatever the.
I've done downward dog on Beachbody, which
oh,
I
congratulations.
Have on the tape.
just I'd like one of to them. See that.
Yeah, and I've done the downward dog and the upward snake or whatever that is, and yeah, it's
let's not talk about
it's hurtful.
Well, it used to be upward.
I broke a couple of vertebrae doing that. I think.
Yeah, we all love Carol. I loved her from the minute I saw her throw a spiral with a football when she first came to our studios out there in Silver Spring, the old 980 studios, and she was new in town in TV for NBC Sports Washington, which at the time was Comcast.
Right.
Which before that was Home Team Sports.
Right. Then she went over to Channel 4, which is still part of NBC,
right.
obviously. You know.
But she was new in town, this young, skinny Iowa girl, athletic, and she gets out in the parking lot during a break with me and Andy with a football and starts throwing
yeah.
seeds. And I'm like, I'm in love.
Is this at the station where you used to hit golf balls?
Yeah, we had an 80-yard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Silver
80
Spring,
yard.
Right?
Yeah. yeah. It was also the station in which the roof leaked. Because it was a flat roof that had gravel on the top.
Yeah.
On top.
What sound like a good idea.
Is it? Yeah, and so it starts leaking. And it's so bad that it's starting to drip into the board. And it's starting to short-circuit the radio board with all the
good.
Electronics, right?
Not good.
So the engineer is putting up tarps under the ceiling, which is collecting water. And the water is starting to pool up like the sword of Damocles hanging
That's
over
exactly
your head.
Exactly right. I remember
waiting
that. Yeah.
For, yeah. And so I called OSHA. I called OSHA on the station.
Oh, nice.
The Office of
You're
Safety.
You're a whistleblower.
Yes.
Yeah.
Office of Safety and Health Administration, whatever.
Yeah.
And then one day, here come the OSHA people, and there's a buzz around the building. Oh, no, what's going on here?
Did everybody know you dimed on them?
No. No, nobody knew I was the rat.
Breaking news?
Nobody knew I was the rat. And so they come in, they start taking notes. I mean, there was packing tape over electrical outlets as a preventative measure for the water. that was tripping in. I'm like, this is not up to code. We're going to die here. Take all these notes. They got their hard hats, their clipboards. They leave. A couple days pass. I go into Todd Castleberry's office, our PD. I'm like, well, what was all that about? He's like, ah, it's OSHA. I got the report here. They just said, make sure to put a few more tarps up and you're good. And I'm like, oh, no, they did nothing. So it went on like that for several weeks, and they finally got the roof replaced. Then they sold the building, and we moved to some other place. The exciting days of radio.
No, I remember going out there when I was doing stuff with them with Paul Harris, who was their morning DJ.
Yep.
And, yeah. Yeah.
That place was hard to get to for sports reporters.
If you didn't know where to go,
yeah,
it was tough to get to.
Incidentally, regarding Carol, there was a time a few years ago at the Big Ten tournament. She was still working for NBC Sports Washington. She came to the Big Ten tournament, and a bunch of media folks got together to play pickup basketball.
Yep.
And there are a lot of sports writers there with mustard on their T-shirts and stuff like that. Carol showed up to play.
Feinstein, huh?
And I had first pick. I had first pick, and I said, I want her. And everybody started chuckling.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
no, you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Exactly. And she was a monster.
She could play.
Yeah, she could go.
You know, when you started doing stuff with the sports reporters, Buck, it was kind of big because you're a little older than me. Be 13 years, I guess, close.
And people, by the way, celebrate my birthday all over the country. June 19th, that's my birthday.
Jesus Christ. I got to edit this out of here now. Did you hear Buck Hance said Juneteenth is his birthday and they celebrate
it? It is my birthday. What can I tell you, man? Okay.
So I had, growing up here in the area, Naki, as you, did you grow up here?
Yeah.
You grew up in Colorado. You went to school in Colorado.
I grew up here. Went to Woodson High School here.
Yeah, so growing up, I knew all about Steve Buck Hance. Watched him on TV. So when he first came on the sports reporters, and I actually got him to laugh, and I was like, I think he kind of thinks I'm not a dipshit. That was a big moment for me, Buck.
It was a big moment?
And the first time Naki, who I didn't know, decided that it was time to body bag me on the air, I was like, okay, that hurt, but it means he respects me enough
exactly.
that he's got to shut my ass up.
How did
up.
You body bag him?
Who knows? It was something.
It was, I definitely, he pissed me off a little bit, and I had to go off the turnbuckle.
No, yeah, you did. Oh, you did. Oh, you climbed the turnbuckle, yeah. And kaboom!
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've done that before, too, because it's like, somebody's got to say something. Does somebody get to stand up to him?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I was the agitator on that show, but it was always great because as the triangular nature of the show was, you never were quite sure who the two-on-one was going to be against. Some days it'd be Andy getting it.
Right. Yeah.
Other days it'd be the guest. Yeah. Most days it'd be me, but I played the heel just fine.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
And you know what? My 4-point shot that you've ridiculed, it's coming. It's just
you said this the last time we were together too.
Not here. Both of you guys are basketball guys, which is good because we have the NBA Finals game number three tonight.
Yep.
And I got rolls of quarters to punch into both of you guys. Let me start with you, Naki. The state of the NBA game, in your opinion, is what?
I will tell you this, that to my way of thinking, Buck, correct me if you think I'm wrong. To me, the NBA is proof positive that ratings mean nothing. The state of the game is as strong as it's ever been because of what it means internationally.
Oh.
You look at I think 6 of the 10 guys who made first and second team all NBA are international players.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Wow. It,
so you have this
Doncic, the MVP, Jokic, Joker.
The freak, of course.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so you get this incredible width and depth.
The world's falling in love with the game.
Yeah, and so
as
to me, people like I have friends of mine who get pissy about the NBA in China and all that stuff, and they're like, well, nobody's watching these games. And I said, yeah, you know what? The ratings here, the whole traditional Nielsen model doesn't mean that people aren't watching these games. People are watching these games. And I find, particularly the first round of the NBA playoffs, and I think that the quality, for whatever reason's tailed off just a little bit, the quality of the first round of the playoffs this year was spectacular.
It really was.
I found myself every night.
Yeah.
And that's also the beauty of the way it was every night. Literally.
Well, that's what kills me about the finals, Buck.
You got to wait.
Well, shouldn't it be eeny, meeny, miny, mo? I know they're trying to goose it. Wednesdays or Tuesdays, Thursdays, Sundays are their best nights.
A lot of it has to do with the travel. You got two teams from two different coasts. So you can't just play back-to-back. And you can't even
Can't you play every other?
Well, you could, but they want to give them, you know, a day to travel.
And rest?
Yeah, and rest. I mean, it's
I thought it was all TV.
What's all TV?
It was all TV considerations. That they didn't need to let him rest. It was just literally,
yeah, well,
we like these nights better.
Well, those nights are good, and you clearly need to have a game on a Sunday and or a Saturday. So, yeah, you got to work it out that way.
I think but Saturdays in the summer are bad. People are out.
And also this weekend is, and I know the NBA hates having an NBA-free weekend. They don't play on Sunday. They play on Monday night.
Yeah,
so they're
dark.
They play Wednesday, Friday, Monday night.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know they got to hate that Sunday night slot, I think, is perfect for them.
Do you know there's a potential conflict with Game 7?
No.
And a Justin Bieber
game
concert.
Game 7 is...
They've already looked ahead, and they're like, there could be a conflict with Game 7.
In San Francisco? Because Game 7 would be there. It's June 19th, by the way.
Thank you, fuck you.
I'm just saying.
Is that a Sunday night this year? Is that a Sunday?
Sunday.
So do you have a registry for your birthday, by the way?
I was born on Father's Day, which is June 19th this year.
Yeah, and it's also the last day of the U.S. Open this year, right?
I will be there.
Oh, happy birthday to you.
Yes. And ding, the first humble brag of today's show.
I will be at the U.S. Open. So here's the thing.
Over-under is eight and a half.
You got here late. Can I throw in a couple that happened before?
Yes, please do.
So me and some buddies are going up there. They invited me, so we're going up there, and we're going on Friday. Game 6 is Thursday, so I will have missed Game 6 in Boston by one day. But if the series goes 7, and should Boston win, I will be in Boston on Sunday for whatever celebration they have there, which could be monumental.
I got it wrong. It's the Rangers Lightning series that would conflict with a Bieber concert at Madison Square Garden.
Okay. Thank God.
No, nobody cares, right? Although Buck,
no, I watched it last night. I loved
it's
it.
Good.
Buck, yep. Here's Buck's thing. He will text if an announcer, any one of his fellow brethren in the business, makes the slightest of fuck-ups. I mean, just a little teensy-tiny one. Like last night, who was it that mixed up Vasilevsky with Shesterkin?
Shesterkin. Sean McDonough.
Okay.
And it was a pretty egregious. I mean,
Vasilevsky plays for the Bolts. He's one of the greats, wears 88.
Right.
This guy, Igor Shesterkin, is sort of out of nowhere, and he's standing on his head, as they say.
So they're getting ready to pull Shesterkin because they have to.
Who doesn't want to pull their Shesterkin?
Right.
Ding, ding, ding.
And so, where's the bell? You need to bring it with
I need
you
to bring
time.
A portable
so,
bell.
So, you know, he says, looks like the Rangers are going to pull Vasilevsky here, you know, and here he comes. Well, here comes Shesterkin out of the net. And he's like, oh, no, it's Shesterkin. So in his mind, he was just confused, which happens.
Yeah.
It normally happens when you're doing a football game because you have 50 guys on each roster. And if you're not that familiar with them, I mean, if you're really not that familiar with them, you can look at your wrong sheet
and
get guys
and
mixed up.
All
yeah,
the time.
Right. Yeah. This shouldn't really have happened. That's why I texted you.
Okay.
I was perplexed.
That said, I'm pro McDonough.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
That's anti. He's anti.
No, you're giving him like a solid B, which is...
That's a harsh grade from Buck.
I agree. But with Buck's best shtick when it comes to announcers, if I may,
yes,
is like when he talks about the announcer's crutches.
Yeah.
You know, their go-to, the stuff that they always resort to under the pressure of the moment. So I give you the floor, Mr. Buckhands.
Well. I mean, there's so many of them. And
presence of mind.
I always tried to just, when calling a game, say something a little differently. Like, not just the same thing. Like, the worst crutch that guys have, and it's usually the color analyst, is the big fella. Okay?
Yeah.
How many times will you hear somebody say the big fella?
Because they forgot
their
name?
Well, just the big man, the guy, the big, you know, the big fella. It's just a real bad cliche.
Cheesy. Yeah.
It's such a cliche.
Of course, Most at the end of his career didn't know anyone's name. So he'd be like, the lefty over to the big guy.
Yeah,
and then the weird guy with the lazy eye, and he shoots at stars.
He was Johnny Most. That's okay.
Right. He was doing number 10 over to number 14.
Yeah. You know? But the other one, I would love to see an announcer call a game without saying this. It's not possible, if you will.
Oh.
And that is knocks it down. How about drains it, hits it, cans it, swishes, knocks it down. Knocks down the free throw, knocks down the three-pointer. You will hear them say knocks it down 50 times in a game, easy.
Right.
And the other, but what I've said for years and years and years, and this is more so in football than basketball, but in all sports, and again, it's usually the color analyst, the most overused words in the history of sportscasting are, I tell you, or some derivation of that. Listen, I tell you, he's really something. I tell you.
How about to be honest?
No.
I hate that.
No, just, I tell you.
It implies you've been lying all the time. Suddenly something honest is going to be
said. And the worst one, the worst perpetrator is Chris Collinsworth. So if you watch a game that he's doing.
I got to tell you.
He'll say, I'll tell you. He'll say it 50 times easy.
You know who's great at mixing things up is the great Doc Emmerich, who's sadly retired. Although I think Kenny Albert's done a fantastic job.
He's very good.
As the heir apparent.
Doc is timeless, right? I mean, the call, it's almost lyrical the way he was able to call a hockey game.
Right. Yeah. There is something called the Doc Emmerich soundboard here. I'm looking it up online, in which all of his different phrases, and he would use such a variety. Pushes ahead, shovels.
Meanwhile,
chips,
he loves
flings.
Meanwhile,
Doc Emmerich.
Oh, yeah. All the time. That's his crutch.
Don't you blaspheme Doc Emmerich. Literally.
I'm more of a Joe Beninati fan than I am a Doc Emmerich
Joe
fan.
Joe B is fantastic.
He's great.
But Doc Emmerich's the GOAT. Just like Brent Musburger. You better not blaspheme him. He, by the way, announced that
he's
no longer going to be the voice of the Raiders. Yeah. What do you think happened there? He is 83.
Know. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't heard him.
Have we listened to the quality of his work? Of late?
He's Brent, motherfucker.
Yeah, so
he's great.
Does that mean he can't?
I don't know. I think just wanted a change. Maybe he's too honest about stuff. You know, Brent's in that YOLO stage of life.
Right. It happened to Marv Albert. He was too honest about the Knicks, and Dolan let him go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, if Marv Albert, this is how I looked at my situation and gave myself some solace. If Marv Albert can lose his job, then anybody can, because this man is a legend.
Well, the Turk
and
comes
in
for
New
us
York,
all.
In New York, talk about a legendary. He's an icon. But just like John Miller with Peter Angelos and Mel Proctor, for that matter, they lost their job because they weren't homers enough. They were too critical of the home team. And that's where Marv was. And he, you'd think at his stage of his career and his iconic nature, that he would be, that he'd have that leeway. He'd have that luxury of being able to be critical.
Isn't the moral of the story that it rarely ends well?
It's not so much that it rarely ends well. Somebody once said to me this. They said, with regard to being a play-by-play announcer or a team announcer, not a play-by, but a team announcer, with regard to the owners, you can't piss them off. You have to jerk them off. That's what they said, and it's good advice, because there's a line there. I found this out, trust me, every play-by-play guy has. There's a line where you can be critically objective, but you can't be demeaning, and there's that line, and once you cross it, that's when you piss people
off.
But
even still, Buck, I thought you were quite deferential to the struggles of The Wiz.
I tried to be.
No, I think you were.
Well, I thought your fandom, I thought you were not necessarily a homer. I thought your fandom shone through.
He was never critical. Yeah. And whenever he came in to do the show with Andy and I, when things were going bad and there was knucklehead things going on, like Andre Blatch saying, "This is your captain speaking," and you're like, "Jesus Christ." You would make sure to carefully tiptoe around and protect
and you
the franchise.
Have to, and I learned that early on.
I know, but they eventually said, we want to change just for change's sake, and that was that. Now, the other part of the problem is, and Naki, you've been doing Maryland basketball as an analyst for how many years?
24.
Okay, how many more do you want to do it for?
As long as he can.
Yeah, it's a great gig.
As long as his voice is there and he's healthy.
When I took the job, the athletic director at the time said, you know, this is a job you could do till you're 75. So, you know, and I take...
Despite your vicious ref baiting that goes on...
I've lightened up.
Do you know he actually got called into a meeting with Fred Bearcat, the director of officials?
Really?
In the ACC?
For criticizing the officials?
Yeah.
Well, there was one particular official who...
I want to know who it is, because I know them all.
No,
I
mean, because he may be still officiating.
No, he's not. He's Rick Hartzell. Remember him?
Sure, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Well, at one point he was, and we had a terrible relationship when I was coaching. So at one point during a Maryland game.
Naki coached at American University from what year to what year?
90 to 97.
Okay.
And so I'm doing a Maryland game, and Hartzell's inbound the ball in front of me, and I said, "Johnny, Rick Hartzell is so close to me, I can see the 666 on his whistle."
And he heard?
Somebody heard and related back to the ACC office.
That's hysterical.
Bearcat says to me, "What does that even mean?" And I said, "It means he's the Antichrist.
The devil.
That's what that means. And he is.
Oh, that's hysterical.
So take, because as a coach, these calls, when they go against you, take food off
your table.
As a coach, not necessarily as a broadcaster, but as a coach.
It's hard for me to draw that line.
I understand.
It's funny because as a broadcaster, the bad calls, while if they go against your team, are very frustrating, they're content gold. You as the broadcaster.
Oh, yeah, now they are,
You as a broadcaster can take it and use it to rail against, and you are indignant that the call went against your team. How could they?
It can also hurt you in the same way it hurt him because of social media now. Back in the day when there was no social media, they didn't hear what you broadcast. They didn't come near. They didn't really get on you. Now everybody hears everything.
And if it's egregious enough, it'll be plucked out.
It happened to me in Miami. It happened to me with the Heat after LeBron left.
Okay, this is a good story.
This is bad, man. I made a lot of people that I thought were my friends weren't after this, but they're my friends again now. But back then, we were playing down there, and at the time, like some arenas, they piped in crowd noise.
Oh,
okay?
Scandal.
Now, there are some places, the first place that ever did that was the Brendan Byrne Arena, which is over at the Meadowlands, where the Nets used to play.
Formerly.
Because there was nobody rubble. Went to those games.
Yeah.
And they used to pipe in crowd noise, and it's pitiful. They actually did it, believe it or not, at the Boston Garden. Could you
imagine? The vaunted
and Marv,
Garden?
Marv Albert called them out on national TV.
Ooh.
And you can tell instantly. You can hear it.
Yes.
Because the decibel level not only goes high, but it comes down very quickly. And you look around in the stands and people are sitting on their hands and you hear all this insane. So in Miami, I said, now that LeBron's gone, they have to pipe in crowd noise here at the arena. And it got out and it went all over their social media and people called me out on all of that stuff. And, look.
Were you wrong?
At the time, I don't think I was. But
what were the repercussions? Did you get talked to?
No, but I know enough people with their organization that they, people said stuff and, kind of held their nose
was
up.
Was an NBA fatwa put out against you?
No, didn't hear that.
The Salman Rushdie, you went against the Heat. Pat Riley's a powerful guy. He's a made guy.
No kidding. The worst one.
He can whack guys' careers there.
The worst one for me, and I don't know if you've ever experienced this, be interesting to see if you have, on a road trip. We were in, I don't know if I've ever really named the city, but I'll name it now. We were in Cleveland doing a game, and we sit right on the floor. And the fans in some arenas are like right behind you in a box.
Sure.
And some are back a ways.
Right.
Here in Cleveland, they're right behind you. And we were beating the Cavaliers. They had LeBron at the time. And the Wizards were beating them start to finish, tip off to the end by 15, 20 points. It was great win for the Wizards. And Phil and I, Shanier, are going crazy, okay? Like every basket is unbelievable. And the place is almost silent because they're just not even in the game.
Right.
Okay? So we're screaming and yelling and all of that stuff. And we come, and I always put my jacket on the seat behind me. I take my coat off and put it on the seat. I reach around to grab my jacket and I come back with a handful of spit.
Oh, man.
The guys in the box behind me had been spitting on me the whole game. So,
oh my God.
I reported it to the NBA. They didn't take action right away, which really made me mad. But eventually they did, and they called CSN, Comcast SportsNet, for the tape of the game, and you could see very clearly on the tape, which is high definition.
Oh, wow.
The guys in the booth behind me spitting on me.
Wow.
And they were actually guests of people that had season tickets in that box. And the team told the people that had the season tickets, you can't bring those people to the game anymore. And if you do, we're going to take your season tickets.
But they didn't take their tickets?
They
should have taken their tickets?
It was the end of the game. But now, the next time
they're responsible for who sits there. It's like the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David trips Shaq and puts him on the IR.
Yeah.
Remember? And Jeff Garland's like, what the fuck? Why were you you're stretching your legs. Yeah.
So what was the how did this end?
The league obviously called Cleveland and told them, you know, about that with the people, and then they didn't do this for a long time, and I really reacted, and I was mad at the league. I said, listen. I said, you guys, I said, this is really egregious. It might even be against the law. It's clearly immoral. I said, listen, if this were Marv Albert or Mike Breen or Charles Barkley, you think you might have reacted a little quicker? And they took that to offense. They didn't like that. Anyway.
you're making it worse now.
Yeah, I did. But at any rate, so then when we played Cleveland the next time on the road, which was a few months later, I called the league. I said, listen, I said, I'm a little bit fearful for my safety. I said, I don't know who's sitting behind me. And if it's the same dudes, you know, and to their credit, they had security all over the place.
Okay.
They had them standing in front of me.
Wow.
They had them everywhere. So it. But that
amazing somebody would hate little old Buck that
But
much.
How about that? Is that how nasty? That?
I mean, it's disgusting.
Fans are savages, though.
Has that?
It's never. I mean, they spit at Johnny all the time.
Johnny Holiday.
No, I'm kidding.
Johnny Holiday, longtime voice.
No, actually, not that, he spits at him.
It's never. I've never ever heard that or seen that. And we've been in
some hostile
Duke
places.
And
yeah.
North Carolina State.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And,
yeah.
Johnny Holiday, longtime voice of the Terps, basketball and football, has stepped away from football, still does hoops.
He's still doing football.
Oh, I thought he did step
away. No. He's. Yeah. I think he considered it at one point in time, but he's still doing it.
Johnny is going to be a feet first out the door guy. Like, listen, literally, they're going to have to carry him out and then punch through the door.
He is my role model, legend, whatever you want to call it. I mean,
he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Johnny Holiday.
How old is he? 84?
84. Are you?
I think so.
84.
I know.
And he's calling games and he sounds good.
He
still sounds good. So I'm thinking, first of all, I love him because, A, he's a professional broadcaster, okay? He's not one of these guys. He's a pro broadcaster.
Right.
And, B, he's as nice a guy as there is. And when I first got here in 84 and met him, he you know, I mean, he would give me mentorship, advice, whatever you want to call it. He's a great guy.
He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right, as a former DJ?
He's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but there are recordings of him.
Okay.
You know, there's a whole exhibit on 60s DJs and what they
meant.
He
was a boss jock. In the 60s.
Yeah, San Francisco, Cleveland, New York City, and then ultimately here in D.C.
Yeah, just a real legendary broadcaster. And he's the dean of all broadcasters in this market right now. Plus, he's still working. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were here that are either deceased or not working anymore. He's still working.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Well, good for him.
God love the man. He's unreal.
You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. In the last 5-6 minutes here today, because we're here for a good time, not a long time. Plus, we got to eat our wonderful power lunch here at the Palm, which you should come down to the Palm and Tyson's Corner and eat their power lunch. It's affordably priced. It's great for lunch. It's not just for big fancy dinners. But let's talk money. Money. Money.
Are you making any? I mean, that's
we're not making any on this podcast.
No,
we have free lunch, which is sort of like money.
Goodbye,
so,
me.
Yeah, no, me too. With the LIV tour and being one of the big stories in sports right now, I've had more discussions about money with more people than ever, and it's fascinating to have these discussions because I know that, you know, $125 million guaranteed for DJ or $200 million guaranteed for Phil. That's awfully hard to say no to.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how much blood is on that
to
actual
play golf?
Money.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. how much money would you want to have?
$1,000.
You're down to your last grand buck?
I'll go over for $1,000 and airfare.
No, seriously.
And lunch at the Dubai Palm.
I wouldn't want to have $200 million. I'd want to have $50 million most. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I'd find something to do with it.
No, you wouldn't. You don't live that interesting of a life. Talk to me. How many houses would you buy? How many boats would you buy, Buck? You're already everybody's best friend. You go on everyone else's boats and on their country clubs.
Zabe, if I had the $50 million instead of the $200 and tried to buy a jet plane, well, that would take care of about $30 million right there.
Well, that's true. You are a licensed pilot.
Yeah.
And you love planes, but would you buy a plane or just buy hours on a plane?
I'd love to see your plane on an app. You know,
Flight Radar 24.
Flight Radar 24. Airbuck.
This app that Buck got me onto on the golf course is absolutely addictive for us airplane nerds. Basically, it's called Flight Radar 24, and it shows live in-air airplanes all over the country. And you click on the icons of the airplanes, and they tell you exactly what's going on. Like, I'm looking at American Airlines flight 721 from Rome to Charlotte. Rome?
Look and see how long the flight is. You'll see if it's like 12 hours, 13 hours.
8 hours and 40 minutes.
That's not Rome, New York. That's Rome, Rome.
Wow. How many people could be on that flight?
To Charlotte. It's a Boeing 777.
That's a big plane.
38,000 feet calibrated altitude, ground speed of 433 knots, arriving in 48 minutes.
There you go.
And you just click and click and click. We're on the golf course the other day, Naki, and planes are flying overhead, and Buck is like punching his app, going, oh, yeah, that's Emirates Airbus 380. It's headed to Jeddah. It'll be there in 15 hours.
That also underscores to me that he would do anything other than swing a 9-iron.
This is true.
For the man who invented Bipley and Bipsick,
right.
Ball in pocket, lost interest.
Yeah.
Or ball in pocket, sitting in cart.
That's correct.
For golf
That's
courses, Bipsick. I can see why. Yeah. So, all right. So, you want all the money. Naki, how much money do you want?
I want all the money. And I don't know why.
Do with all
I don't. I would find something to do.
Talk to me. Name
I would,
some things
I would,
you do.
I would have a house on seven continents. I would travel. I wouldn't be playing the game forever. And so you'd think you'd have a span of years to live afterwards where you could do whatever the fuck.
$50 million right now. That's not enough. You'd want more than $50 million.
If it was offered to me, I'd take every
You'd take
dime.
More.
Every dime.
Why buy houses on seven continents when you can just Airbnb the most luxurious ones and still come out ahead
but
and
I think
not
the,
be
the
burdened
the bigger
by
question
it.
Is not whether me or Naki would want $50 million, but if you're Phil Mickelson, who's clearly set for life in terms of money.
He said he gambled a lot of it away.
I can't
he
imagine.
He said his gambling was reckless.
I can't imagine that. It's like a ball player.
Why can't
who,
you imagine that?
Because I see these ball players who the NBA, the average salary now is what, $7,000-$8,000 a year?
Right. Highest average salary in all of pro sports.
So you look at a guy who signs a contract. I'll just throw one out and say, like, okay, this is insane. But John Wall, who makes $40 or $45 million a year, and now has, or even Gilbert Arenas when he played, lifetime probably made, I don't know, $300 million. These guys are set for life, right? They're not going to.
Antoine Walker made $108 million.
He
was different, right, Buck?
Yeah, he was
because the new
different.
Generation, they're smarter now.
They better be.
I don't think they necessarily are. They're going to start with a higher pile of money. But it's for a lot of these guys, some of them at least, it's going to go down to zero.
Aren't you signing the contract to not just for yourself?
For your kids?
For your family, for your kids,
for future generations.
Your kids' kids.
Absolutely.
You know?
And what are they going to do with no work ethic, nothing to work for, and a pile of money?
You put it in a trust so that they have to work, and they know they're not getting it until a certain age.
Really?
Yeah. That's.
Have you ever known any trust fund guys?
Grown
up with a trust fund? I have.
So
trust me, they live their life, Naki, knowing there's a pile of money waiting for them.
So if you have the opportunity to make sure that your kids and your kids' kids live comfortably on the one hand.
How many generations do I have to take care of?
Say two, three. Okay?
Three!
Or you
fuck you, work for a living.
Or you just, you know what, they're going to have to figure it out for themselves. All right? It's either or. You're going to say, fuck you guys. You have to figure it out for yourselves. Okay. Is that
I don't know. I think that the key nobody thing...
Nobody thinks like that, right?
I guess I'm one of the few people who thinks there's something called too much money. I guess I'm one of the few people, not the only one, but in this whole discussion about how much is too much, I'm the only guy that thinks I don't want that much money. You become more of a target to both financial scammers and to people, kidnappers possibly, and other ne'er-do-wells. And it just, what else are you going
to
buy in life?
I can't speak to that because I'll never have that much money. So I can't speak
to that. Well, imagine. It's hypothetical.
No, but that's why I asked you about these athletes. They do have money. I mean, some of them have millions and millions and millions of dollars. They'll never have to work again. Their kids will never have to. Their families will be secure. That's why you have to wonder about those people, not people like us. We're going to want as much money as we can get.
I know, but I'm just wondering, for you regular guys who have worked for a living and live a fairly normal life, although yours is very charmed, hashtag humblebrag, how much is too much? I think 50. I wouldn't want net worth of more than 50. That's plenty. And I wouldn't want to win a lottery of more than $5 million. And here's why on the lottery. Okay, hold on. Okay. Hold that thought. When you win a lottery, people know it, and they're like, you didn't work for that money, so I feel like I can ask you for some. And if it's more than $5 million, it's easier for people to ask you for a chunk of it. If it's $5 million, I can go, well, after taxes, it's really 2.7. And, you know, my wife and I, family, we are comfortably now set in our retirement if we manage it carefully. But I don't have any money to give you. It's not life-changing. It's a huge chunk of money.
So where is the line?
$5 million for me is all.
$5
million. In a lottery, I don't want to win any more than $5 million. If I earn my money, I want to tap out at $50 million.
Do you think that there's an element, particularly as it applies to the golf scenario that you initially started this conversation with, is there not an element of, well, he got $100 million?
Oh, keeping score. Yes.
You absolutely keeping score.
It's a keeping score thing, and I suppose once you get to a certain hundreds of millions of dollars, now you can start a foundation. You can do something larger than just buy mansions and jets.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it.
But I don't think the Dustin Johnson Foundation is coming anytime soon.
You don't know
what
he's doing.
Yeah, you know, I thought I'd get a foundation for, you know, dudes who like to bang hot chicks of NHL legends' daughters.
Oh, man.
All right, exit question. Do you think the LIV tour is going to be a success? A sort of meandering sidebar that ends up dissolving, or a clown show that collapses?
I mean, a lot of it has to do with television, obviously. And you know
what the event on is this week? It's on Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah. See,
how about that? They'll eventually get a TV partner, but still.
Right. And if they get a major TV partner, I guess I'd watch if a lot of those guys are there. It's just golf, and I just want to watch.
They plucked DeChambeau and Patrick Reed today.
Saw that. Patrick Reed.
Won't really miss him.
No. But that's also why they threw as much money at Tiger as they did, because Tiger becomes essential for that TV package, I would think.
I mean, right? There's a guy.
Sure, it is for TV.
You have to ask yourself that question. How much more money does he need?
Well, also, how often is he going to play? Right now, he's just basically relegated to playing majors, right? I mean, that's what we're seeing.
But he could play 5 live events, and it would instantly get a television contract. The Tiger fanboys would watch it. It'd give him credibility.
Sure.
That's why they probably undershot on the offer.
What did they offer him?
High 9 figures, meaning tickling the underbelly of a billion.
Wow.
They should have said, $1.5 billion, it's on the table for 24 hours. Overshoot it. Collect the asset and figure out the rest there. Remember, it's the Saudis. They've got infinity money.
Right, yeah. So would you take that if you were him?
No, it's too much money. I told you. $50 million. That's all I want. I want $50 million. I want some lobster bisque, which you're going to have
By
right
the way,
now.
We talked briefly about basketball. We didn't mention this. I hope Mike Breen is back tonight.
Yes.
I've missed him.
I have, too.
Yeah.
He's scheduled to return tonight from COVID.
Good. So. Good. Because I texted with him. I know him. And he said he had a cold. And he's done games where he's felt worse.
Sure.
But because of the protocol, he couldn't work. And that's a shame.
If they said, Buck, Mark Jones is down. Everyone's down. We need you.
I'm there.
Could you do the game?
Of course.
Would he be good?
Would I be good?
Yeah.
Of course.
I'd do my best.
I do my best.
You'd be stepping all over Van Gundy and Mark Jackson.
Naki, how would you be if they said do an NBA game?
You know, I'd do it in a heartbeat, but I got to tell you, one of the things that I love about those guys is they've perfected the three-man booth thing, which is not an easy thing
not
to do.
Easy. It's not easy at all, and they have, and because not everybody can do it. Those guys can do it. But look, he shoots, he knocks it down.
We're going to knock down some lunch.
Count down how many times you hear that tonight.
Boys, have anything you want today. Just keep it under $30.
Plan on it.
Okay.
So what happens now? Is the food free or do we pay someone?
Of course not. They send you a bill.
162 games of baseball a season can feel like a grind to watch, but you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Run lines, money lines, props galore. Nobody gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. Getting started is simple. Deposit $300 and play with $200 instantly. Just use promo code ZABE to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus. Whether you're a diehard fan or a newcomer to the sport, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using promo code ZABE to secure your first deposit bonus up to $1,000 with MyBookie. Whatever you put in, they'll meet halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.com.